We haven't covered in the last unit that you all went through several points. The points that we haven't covered are very easy to cover, however, and these appertain unto mainly conduct of the auditor. There's hardly any one of you present who would dream that his conduct in the auditing chair could be better. It's obvious. And I would be the last one to state that my conduct in the auditing chair was the me plus ultra. That's better than yours. Now, an analysis of an auditor's conduct exists in the Auditor's Code 1954. It's a very, very good thing to make people learn this Auditor's Code 1954. Every time we have found a pre-clear getting into, you know, bad condition, he's suddenly in bad condition or something like that, we trace back over everything that happened there, everything the auditor did and the condition the pre-clear was in, and we always find several factors out of the auditor's code have been violated. Just one all by itself apparently will not completely dish a pre-clear. But two, three, something like that, all happening at the same time, and you're liable to have a spinner on your hand. It's just as vital as this, and this is all under the subject of auditor conduct. The auditor's code is auditor conduct, but part of that code is pre-clear condition, and it's actually sort of a misconduct on the part of the auditor not to look over the condition of the pre-clear, see, before he audits. So there's a couple of steps in there that refer to pre-clear condition. One is sleep. But this is covered today, and don't do auditing past 10. And the other one is food. Now, it's very rare that an auditor actually asks a pre-clear, have you eaten lately? Or what are you eating these days? Mostly because, you see, that's a little bit of a social breach. Actually, it's a social intercourse. It's really none of our business with this stuff starting and everything. It's not an ordinary or routine question. But let's say that you're auditing a neurotic. And if you omit to ask that question, you're liable to get halfway through 8C or something like that and just have this guy spin. Now, the E-meter, of course, is something we don't use anymore. The E-meter registers the behavior of energy. So it will register the behavior of a stimulus response mechanism, such as the reactive mind. But we're not interested in those significances and particularities. However, the E-meter can be used, if you have one, in a very peculiar fashion. You ask the pre-clear, you tune up the electrode, you know, I mean the hand grip, so that he's registering. And then you ask him to draw a deep breath and expel it. And you will watch the needle on almost any E-meter. You will watch the needle dive. The needle will dive. And if it doesn't come back right away, or if it doesn't dive, the basal metabolism of the pre-clear is shot. Now, you would be amazed how many people's basal metabolism is shot in. And you actually, that just simply means the oxygen-carbon burning rate of the body. You would be amazed what would happen in a morning session. You don't eat breakfast. And if you were to make this basal metabolism test on one of these E-meters around here, and by the way, I put an E-meter around here for the use of these units, which has a beat meter on it. I want you to see that beat meter manifestation. It's a real good thing to observe. You pick that up, make sure that we go through that. It's an incredible thing that one human being can monitor energy of another human being. But also at the same time, show them this based on metabolism thing. You don't eat breakfast, and you know you won't register on a basal metabolism. It'll go twitch. And a psycho goes that way all the time, twitch. He does that all the time. But here you don't eat breakfast, and here it is 9, 10 o'clock, something like that, and your basal metabolism is chopped. Now, we could, but don't have to, draw the inference in between these that a person should not be audited when his basal metabolism is in such bad shape. Now, we could infer this just because a psycho and a person who hasn't eaten have the same meter reading. But if this was all, why, we would skip it. We wouldn't pay any more further attention to it. Just because that happens to coordinate is no reason why it would upset auditing. But there's another factor. We have learned that when a basal metabolism won't register, when the fellow has practically got zero, auditing doesn't seem to do him any good. That's peculiar. And we checked that test after test. In one of the units where we were taking some tests on this, we had the interesting experience of having the three cases that didn't make any progress to amount to anything in that unit. Not traceable to auditing, but traceable to the fact that these people didn't eat. You see, here's what happens. The body, lacking proper fuel, will start chewing on facsimiles. And the awareness unit puts out a little bit of energy, and the body goes, chow. It isn't that food will ever make anybody sane. It won't, not even vaguely. But absence of it to a body that is accustomed to it will bring about a greediness for facsimiles, which an auditor would have to work a long time to overcome. However, there is a process that can be run even on this person, and that's remedied havingness. Something very weird. I've never made this experiment so as to be any kind of conclusive experiment. But in just two cases that I tried it on, very cursorily, no breakfast was eaten, and we got a BMR test, you see, and then found out that was barely tick. Then we remedied havingness on these preclears like mad, and we got a BMR reading. It's very fascinating. Well, I don't say that's conclusive because I didn't carry forward what I would dignify as a series, such as 10 or 15 tests. I did a medical series of two tests. But just indicates something there that you should, in the first place, discover what your preclear is eating. Now, let's say you're working for the HANSI. And you're getting pre-clears that you don't have any former cognizance of, you know, you just all of a sudden you're having pre-clear. Start auditing this person. This person might be from a long way away. We used to discover this in the old foundations. Be from a long way away and have invested quite a bit of money in auditing, you see, in travel expenses and that sort of thing. And aim to get by that week on a few cups of coffee and some sandwiches. Won't make any progress. Won't make any case progress. Leaving aside from the fact that every time this happened and we had trouble with the preclear started to spin or something of the sort, we traced it immediately to no eating. Now, the other coordinating factor that goes along with this is the fact that a psycho won't eat. The main trouble with them is they won't eat. The psychiatrist, a psychiatric clown, time who rushed up to me, and I walked in the sanitarium. He says, "You're not a patient you put in here." I put a patient in there, some girl's husband had put her in. Says, "I'll have to give her an electric shock. I'll have to give her an electric shock. I'll have to give her an electric shock." You know, standard psychiatric. And I said, "Why? What's the matter?" "She's not eating. She's not eating." "Well, what's electric shock got to do with it? Will that make her eat?" "No, but she's not eating." "Or she'll starve to death." And I said, "Well, if you give her an electric shock, will she then eat?" "That hasn't anything to do with it." We had quite an argument. I remember this point very vividly. I was running a process on a pre-clear the other day, and this blue is a lock of no answers. But the psychiatrist will try to give people electric shocks or do something weird or peculiar. Every time your patient stops eating, they see this as one of the big signs. They have at least learned to note this no eating as a very poor manifestation on the part of psychotics. So can we note it as a poor manifestation on the part of a preclear? Whether the preclear is psychotic or not, the failure to eat will affect auditing. If you do have somebody who doesn't seem to be able to eat, and if you were very conversant with all the processes we have, you would know that you could probably just run something like 8C, which actually does do a remedy of having this, and get them back to eating. Or if it was very desperate indeed, you actually could waste food, you know, expanded Gita, on food, and bring them up to a point where they could eat. But remember that it is a manifestation of mental imbalance, this no eat. Now your preclear merely skips breakfast. Maybe under the pressure of having stayed up late, you see, and so on, his normal course of human existence, he actually doesn't recognize that he is in poor shape. If he had to run down the street, for instance, to catch a bus or something like that, he'd find his breath very short. And when he got on the bus, he would start to worry. You get how this works out? See? I mean, the guy doesn't eat breakfast because he's in a hurry or something, and he rushes to catch his bus, a lot of physical exertion, you know, gets on the bus and he starts to worry. The old mock-up starts to pull in these facsimiles. See, he swerves, 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 and next thing you know, worry, 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 don't worry. Now, reversely, then, he will get it on this way. You get a stimulus response mechanism. When he starts to worry, he can't eat. He'll also get it on the basis that when he starts to worry, he has to eat. We got a preclear down in Texas that is on compulsive or obsessive eating. He calls it this horrible gluttony. He is just eating, 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 eating. Well, I don't know, he's worked out some kind of a mechanism there, you see, so that but if he eats enough, then he won't pull in any more facsimiles on himself, and so it won't hurt. That's what it adds up to. But this individual, let's just say his routine physical mental condition, average sort of guy, just by failure to eat breakfast, will discover him worrying. Now, I ran into a series of 7 ulcer cases that were, they were having a terrible time. This was a series, a good series. I plotted out all the factors that were in common in this person, these people's life. And the factor most in common was row at the breakfast table. This was definitely in common in these things. Upset condition in the home, so forth. There was another factor in common. 10:30, 11 o'clock on the job, these people were doing an awful lot of fussing, one-fiving, and worrying. See, it is a stimulus response proposition. Their home was antipathetic, and they didn't do any eating in it. And this constant and consistent no eat, of course, eventually pulled in something like AAs and other factors and old gunshot wounds. And the next thing you know, they had holes in their stomach. What is the exact mechanism here? The individual doesn't eat, The particular area that protests the most is the stomach. We find the stomach and other organisms pulling in facsimiles, you see. And of course, on a stimulus response basis, they would get those things which most closely agreed with the area. A fellow's been shot in the stomach and he's hungry. The thing to do is to pull in the gunshot facsimile and eat it up. Actually eat it up. The situation is very simple to see here. But this has a lot to do with auditing. And that is one little point in the auditor's code which an auditor might not pay very much attention to. Mostly because it is not a stimulus response basis. The other things in the auditor's code that are of definite interest to people of your experience. This business of running every comm line flat, that's now part of the auditor's code because it's definitely detrimental not to do so. We used to say this in another way. Don't give a second command because the first command is followed. Now that's a shadow of this, isn't it? Don't fill a water with a wall and keep sitting there. So you say, well, touch the floor. See, he didn't execute the first command and we gave him a second command and you will find him in the fine state of confusion. Well, look at this as another phase of the same thing. Keep giving him the command, touch the wall, until he does it with ease and alacrity. Now this interposes on you and you will want to know and students will want to know from you, what are the limits of alibi here? Because there are questions that you can ask which will produce 150 hours of communication lag. They definitely are questions you can ask. One such question is, where would a fat man be safe? Which was asked of a fellow one time. Gee, let's see, talking about a con line. It just took him forever before he finally got in there and made himself a big fly. All right. There's a point of jurisprudence here then. Supposing your auditor does ask such a question and this produces such a lag, what does the auditor do? Well, number one, he shouldn't have asked the question. But having asked it, he's sunk. And this you must convince a new student of. Having asked the question, he's sunk. That is, if he's getting a terrific communication lag on this question, that's just too bad, that's all. He did it. Let's make sure first, however, that it's an answerable question. But let's say he made an answerable question and he got a communication lag and he was only auditing this boy 2 hours anyhow and the whole 2 hours goes by with that comm line. Well, the auditor did it. So actually, it is up to the auditor to track that case and keep in touch with the case, you know, in a gentle sort of way. Call him up in the evening and ask him if he's got the answers. Call him up in the morning and ask him if he's got the answers. Until he all of a sudden gives you the answer to the question. It actually isn't vital that you ask the question a second time. If he can answer it once, you'll find out that the major upset will come off of it. He will experience quite a relief. But of course, a real good auditor would then ask again, wouldn't he? So he can just find this question which you asked this fellow. You said, where would a fat man be safe? And 75 hours later, you check with him, you know, he answers it. He finally answers it and he says, at the meat packing plant. This isn't even sequitur, but it's perfectly logical to him for some reason. That's where he'd be safe. That it's up to you again, really, if you're really doing a good job of auditing, the second he answered it, to ask him the same question again. I can just see you now, 4 or 5 months from now, still calling this fellow up occasionally to find out what the next answer was. Because the next comm lag is probably going to be, if the first one was 75 hours, the next one's probably going to be 30 or 40, if not 150. So it tells you the liabilities of straight wire and 8D. That's 8D where things say. It tells you the liability of these things on people who haven't had a considerable amount of two-way communication and little stuff. You run into such a case, by the way, something you wouldn't mind remembering, something you wouldn't mind forgetting, you'd run into an awful lag. But by the way, this is not necessarily true. There's probably a long sequence of questions that I could probably sit down and remember some of these questions that produces awful communication lag on almost anybody. Anything that strikes straight at a woman's identity as a woman, you see, would be that mass or complication, you see. I asked a woman one time, we were going along just swimmingly. We were evidently doing fine with the ARC straight wire. We were just getting along splendidly. And I asked her, I said, all right, now, I don't know what was wrong with me. I might have been doped off or something. I asked her that question. I was asking her what other things are this and that and so on. I said, and what are women used for? I never expected to find a lag, and maybe on another creek beer I'd never get the same lag again. Well, boy, we got ourselves a communication lag, one of these 100-hour communication lags. I was just up as far as the session was concerned. Well, in view of this fact that you have to smash a communication lag flat and flatten it and so forth, then it rather tells you that you shouldn't adventure too deeply into the deep significances on straight wire, on creek clears, that you're going to see shortly and seldom. It tells you that you ought to stay in there with processes which will readily get a case into fairly good condition, like 8C, or opening procedure by duplication. If you've got a couple of hours, by the way, you can run opening procedure by duplication, get its first calm lag off of it. But if you try to run it for a half an hour, there's no sense in running it for a half an hour. You won't even show up a calm lag. The guy could usually do it for a half an hour. At 40 minutes, 50 minutes, something like that, you start to show the strain. The next thing you know, the social machinery goes crunch and the gearbox tears out, and it makes it about a two-hour process just to get a calm lag. So we have another manifestation here. The individual can do a process and has tolerance for a process for a certain length of time, and then it's going to show up into a calm lag. But this is again just calm lag, it's nothing else. And if you were to run opening procedure by duplication, or you're going to run this fellow for 2 hours, see, you run opening procedure by duplication for 1 hour and 45 minutes. And oh, he just went along with well-oiled wheels, no squeak, nothing, everything going fine. In the 1 hour and 45 minutes, he hits his first calm lag. Crunch. It's going to take another hour, isn't it? Anyway. And so there you've shot your auditing schedule all to the devil. Well, usually when people go crunch on opening procedure by duplication, they really haven't had enough HC. That's the way it works out normally. So it looks to me like the only safe process that you could run when you weren't going to get your hands on a freight clear again right away would be 8C, and that's pretty close to true. The only safe process. But of course, a freight clear will go crunch on 8C, but they don't go crunch as badly, and they snap out of it more quickly. 8C, you get a calm lag off of something in 8C usually in a very few minutes. So selection of the process here has a lot to do with whether or not one can follow the auditor's code there. So this here imposes judgment on the auditor. Well, don't ever let a student walk into it blind, thinking he could just audit anything at random, you know, get away with it. Because you can't audit anything at random and get away with it. He takes up a brief list you're going to be in contact with, or you're going to be given a 30-hour intensive to or something like that. Sure, you can leave him in a calm lag. Sure, you can leave him in a calm lag. The end of the session came and they were still calm lagging on the session. You only had a vague leaf lag. You gave them some HC to bring them on up to present time and so forth. You know where your error would be? You're not starting the next session with that question. And there's where changes of auditors are very bad, is when this condition occurs and then you change auditors, and the next auditor doesn't know this. You really just wind the pre-clear up on the track very neatly, very, very neatly. You gave him the session, the end of the session, he was still con-wagging, but you had to wind it up because of the end of the session, and then Joe Jakes gets hold of him the next morning and runs a little bit of 8C and starts on some entirely distinct process. And then we find out that this person, this is what's wrong really with change of auditors, now we find out that this person has suffered at the point of auditor change. Well, the real intimate mechanism of suffering at the point of auditor change is not simply the changes of personalities involved. It is that the last auditor did not clean up, and the new auditor didn't inquire and finish up. So that part of the auditor's code becomes relatively easy to get around if we do keep in mind. But all you have to do is ask the pre-clear what was being run, but remember this is a variety of straight wire. And you get comm lags on that too, what was being run, and you finally plow up what was happening by the other auditor, and then carry on that other auditor's process only long enough to take out the remaining comm lag that was in it. Now, that would be the only trick on changing auditors. So there's something to know about changing auditors, isn't there, right? Straight out of the auditor's code. You get a pre-clear who has just been audited, the thing to do is to give him a little straight wire on his last auditor until you actually do show up what was occurring. The only thing that can go wrong with this is that the pre-clear occasionally is an obsessive wire and will give you the weirdest kind of a story you've ever heard of. Well, now let's take process lag. That is the next point on the auditor's code, which is of tremendous importance, process lag. How long does it take to run a process flat? Now let's say that we can run an auditing question flat by repetition, and get that communication lag so it's not too long. But what about the whole process? Now this one question probably belongs to a whole process. Well, that would be like running 8C flat. Only the way that is stated in the auditor's code is run a process as long as it produces change and no longer. Well, how long does it take to discover whether or not a process produces change? Well, actually, you might be able to find it out in a hurry, but you won't find it out in a hurry with opening procedure by duplication, and very often you won't find it out about opening procedure of AC. This is a curiosity here. You can run an opening procedure by duplication for an hour with producing no change, and then an hour and 15 minutes and you start to produce more changes than you can readily handle. Same way with 8C. I've seen people go through 8C just like little wound up soldiers. Just oh, wonderful, just walking around. Evidently what's happening is the auditor must be moving every muscle in their body. And all of a sudden the fellow starts to wake up and say, you know, somebody's walking this body around this one? So on 8C, an opening procedure by duplication, we would have to keep a weather eye on. Now, if we were very experienced, however, do you know that it is not true that it is not detectable? It is detectable. You can detect it. It's mainly experience permits you to do that. You see this fellow going on a lackluster machine process, type of process. You just watch what's happening and you know what's going to happen. Sooner or later, he's going to wake up. And you can detect this, in other words. I ordinarily can detect it simply when I start talking to the pre-clear. I simply categorize it as, oh. And one of these things will sneak up.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
But we get to the other side of this picture. You know, you can run a process. I can't, but that's a funny one. That's true, I can't. I can't run a process on and on and on and on and on without continuing to produce change one time or another. See? But I've had this reported to me and I've observed this, so I have to include it in this little talk I'm giving you on the auditor's code. And that is that a process is often run by an auditor much longer than it produces change in the Franklin. Now, once more, this is something I have picked up by looking, not by experiencing. I can always make opening. This isn't because I'm a good auditor. I am, but it isn't because I'm just trying to hold myself up here as an example. It's just the only example I happen to have. Score. We look this over, and I can always do something to the preclear to make a process produce change. I can put more two-way communication into the process when I work it slightly different, but just spare saying exactly how this is. When the preclear stops changing, I start putting more two-way communication into the process, and he starts changing again. Well, I suppose just discussing it here, the answer really is there in front of your face. The auditor and the preclear get together and they start running the same two-way communication. The process itself will go flat. Well, when a process goes flat and it isn't producing change, and the communication lag is perfectly good and it isn't shifting, why, in the auditor's code, it says you go on to another process. And we had a boy here that I turned over to a couple of auditors who should have known better. And this fellow was fed some 40 hours of opening procedure by duplication, but he was permitted to do it on a sort of a grind basis. If I somehow or other get through this, I will then be able to get on to something more, and it obviously will do it. No, the only person that will do it there is the preclear, not the process. And these two boys produced their maximum change with opening procedure by duplication at the end of 15 hours. They did opening procedure duplication 15 hours, and at that time, the preclear was in very, very stable condition with regard to duplication. And then they went on and they did it for gone sakes for another 25 hours with no change whatever in the preclear. Well, I traced this over and I found out one of the reasons why no change, further change occurred in the preclear. There had been an auditor's code break at about 6 hours. About 6 hours deep in the opening procedure with duplication, which they never permitted this preclear to talk out. You know, wouldn't let him discuss it, wouldn't listen to this sort of thing. And it was hung up there. Well, the sin on their part was to waste all this time. If they're going on and on and on and on and on and on, another process, you see, probably would have followed the auditor's code breaker. It would have done something. It would have shoved the case forward. But there was no sense in whatever the conditions or upset had been. We don't care about that. They could have run opening procedure by duplication from hour 13 to hour 15 and have found no change. But they should have been smart enough to have detected that there was no change going to occur. Furthermore, they shouldn't even have to run from 13 to 15 to find out there was no change. But the process was flat, and yet they went on 25 hours. So don't let one of your students do that. Normally, a process I have found hangs up and stops working on a preclear. Particularly, we're talking now about the six beefiest processes known to man. We're talking about these six basic processes. They're pretty beefy, and if they're done right and produce no change, there's something wrong some ways. Usually with the auditor, we know with the preclear. All right. Now, where we get this clause in the auditor's code, then we're just sort of putting that in over a big manhole that is open that everybody can see anyhow. We're putting a sign manhole. It would be very hard to maintain a two-way communication with the preclear and do something like opening procedure by duplication or HC any of its parts. Maintaining a two-way communication with the preclear in whatever condition without discovering a change. This is real hard to do. But auditors manage this.
Yeah.
So it is in the auditor's code. And when you teach this process, when you teach that part of the auditor's code, you will find that you are into a lot of quibble and argument. With some students. You're into a lot of quibble, a lot of argument concerning this. Because they say, well, I ran opening procedure by duplication for 20 minutes and it didn't produce any change, so it's against the auditor's code to continue the process. This is something, it takes an hour for that process to bite. But here, in the auditor's code, we find the condition present that if you want to get real smarty, real nasty as an instructor, you can enforce it to the letter, to the hilt, and it will function. In other words, you can just demand utter, slavish, literal interpretation and obedience of the code without any further argument, and you'll get into lots less trouble. See, you just crush. And you will save more of your students from spinning. You will save them from more bad auditing just by that. That is the auditor's code. There's no further argument with it. It is a code of morals, arbitrary, so it isn't even based on reason. It's just ideas that Ron dreamed up one day, and there are a couple of other auditors around that agreed with him. And so therefore he says the whole field has agreed with him, and that's the way it is. And the CECS has shot auditors for disobeying a comma in it. You know, crush. For as a matter of fact, it is not a crush code at all. It is a code which is itself built upon knowledge hardly won over many years of auditing experience. It's not, by the way, built on theory. It's just built on arbitrary observation. There's no theory in it any place. It's just, they don't do this, and pretty clear as thin, so we'll put it in the code that they gotta do this. However, to anyone with experience, this is something which demonstrates itself by judgment. That doesn't mean it's any less effective, but it is demonstrated by judgment. And an actual interpretation of the code by judgment is far, far better than just a literal slavish following of the code. Understand it, know what it is about. Now let's take this business about process lag. Always don't work process any longer, so forth. Well, if you know your processes, of course, you know you're going to work it. You know how long it's going to take for it to produce a process change. You've got enough sense not to run it another 80 hours beyond that time. We haven't, in running this, ever let up on it, particularly. But an auditor who was trained in this has just pulled a boo-boo. No, I beg your pardon, it's not a boo-boo. It was a my God. He thought he was doing mimicry with a psychotic preclear. The psychotic preclear got mad at him, so mimicry immediately dictated that he become ragingly mad and much madder at the preclear. It was quite cute, isn't it? Well, we find that part of it. We practically murdered the boy. We shot him from guns. He should have known better. Let me say a word on that. I'll tell you again. Never mimic the bizarre, the strange, or the unusual in a preclear. Never mimic the bizarre, strange, or unusual. Mimic the average, the expected, the agreed-upon behavior of a society. And you'll find out that you were appealing to that last little one-eighth of an erg of power left in the preclear. And this is agreeing with the awareness of awareness unit, that is the average conduct, the so forth. And you validate the other by mimicking the bizarre, the strange, and unusual, and you're just giving force and power to his entities and his circuits. All right, he got mad at the preclear. This preclear was spinning, so we knew something was wrong. This preclear hadn't been spinning the day before. This preclear was spinning, so the explanation for one and all seemed to indicate that something bad had happened here, and we finally got a few cross-examinations going, and we discovered what had happened. That wasn't all that happened, but that was merely a flagrant disobedience of the code, very flagrant. You see, he should have been able to have determined that this was wrong simply because it is in the auditor's code. It says never get angry with the preclear. Mimicry or no mimicry, he should have determined that it was wrong simply by that. Well, all morals codes have their shortcomings. All codes and morals are arbitrary, their shortcomings. You find times when it is necessary to get around them and so forth. And you find out, however, in training students that you leave the door open 1/8 of an inch on this particular morals code called the auditor's code, and they promptly push it open about 2 feet. And then it's wide open. There goes all the sanity in the back. So it's a good thing to keep the door shut tight on it. It's been very closely written to agree with the reality of auditing. It is the reality of auditing. Where we have difficulty with a pre-clear, you can say this uniformly. That the pre-clear has had code breaks with existence. Pre-clear is in trouble, he's not clear, he's not clear. He's had code breaks with existence. What code breaks? Auditor's code breaks. If this works so effectively in an auditing session, then for heaven's sakes, let's recognize with great clarity that these must be fundamental factors which are aberrative in the society. If you want a dissertation on Scientology and what happens on the fourth or third dynamic that aberrates people, just look at the auditor's code. Must be coordination there. See, we just say that arbitrarily. We don't inspect it any further. We learned in 4 years of auditing that all these things would submit pre-clear, so therefore we're working on people who've been smug, so therefore this must be what society does. Just like that. And we could be real dizzy about this and say, well, the only thing we have in Scientology is the auditor's code. And this explains everything. Now all you have to do is memorize the auditor's code, and you can let the axioms and everything else go. And if you knew the auditor's code, well, then you would know exactly what aberrating factors existed in society, exactly what aberrated people. And you'd probably go on with some very long dissertation on this subject. Great cue. Where that code is concerned, this is probably very truthful. It probably, however, being an arbitrary thing built solely upon observation and entirely lacking in theory, it is the most untheory thing, the Auditor's Code 1954, that you ever ran into. There's no theory behind this. There was no theory utilized in putting it together. Just observation and thought, no thought involved. So, of course, it isn't organized. And it'd be an interesting experiment sometimes just to teach somebody the auditor's code and tell them this was what was wrong with society, and that you run these things out of a pre-clear or remedy them, and you would then have a pre-clear that's in very good shape. Maybe it's true. Might be true. But the auditor's code came under my perusal here a few months ago, and I recognized that we had long since been drifting from that horrible thing, an unwritten code. See, we knew what was bad, we knew what was good, but it was an unwritten code, and we didn't have a good, straight rendition of this code at all. So I put together these factors, which I've been keeping notes on, about 2 millimeters to the left, south, southeast, and would you love one, got long notes. And wrote them up. And here in writing Dianetics 1955, I suddenly found out that there was another factor there. There was number 16, as maintaining two-way communication with the pre-clear. Well, let me say a little bit more about that one particular factor, maintaining a two-way communication with the pre-clear. The darnest dissertation on communication you ever saw in your life is Dianetics 1955. I mean, this goes on and on and on. It takes the part of stress and it puts it back together again and weaves it into little beautiful mats. It takes them apart and makes fracturing. And it pushes it all together into a solid plastic block and pulls it apart again. And it's about communication, 1955. It's about nothing else. Communication and time. Affinity and reality are mentioned with the most incidental click of the index finger that you can imagine. The rest of it, all 50,000 words, are devoted to communication. Now, showed you how important communications become. A couple of the boys the other day got wildly excited. They just got through watching the audit. 10th or 12th time. And I used to say that there are probably a lot of things that I do that I don't know I do. That probably has some bearing upon a case. And I've actually attempted occasionally an investigation of auditors who were getting results and auditors who didn't get results to find out what factors were present in the one that weren't in the other. Well, so far, this has been an absolutely dead end. I mean, just a completely dead end alley. There wasn't anything I was doing except maybe being friendlier. These two guys found something. They found something, which is fascinating. Never noticed auditors didn't do this. These two boys went out and they immediately prepped up a couple of staff auditors to do this. And immediately their cases started to make 7 feet move strides. It was that important. Cases had kind of hanging on. They found out that I acknowledged every action and every reply of the treatment. I always acknowledged. Of course, that's just the natural thing you would do. No, not evidently. So the preacher walks over and touches the wall and looks at you. And you say, okay, go over and touch the other wall. I don't audit that one. He goes over and touches the wall, and he looks at me. And I say, okay. Now go over and touch the other wall. He does. He looks at me. I say, fine. And I audit the group, and the group's sitting there. And I say, okay now, all right. And before I start on a new chain of commands, I give him 4 or 5 okays sometimes. Okay, okay. Wake them up, you know, wake them out of it. Pry them out of the process. I'm about to change the process. I want to give them plenty of notice without giving them plenty. So what I do is acknowledge what they have been doing. See, okay, okay, okay. Well, I'm not setting myself in any way. As a matter of fact, the mothers of the town I was raised in held them on time with pain. I ever recognized that I ever got set up as a model for anything. I sure they would have shot their progeny if they thought this had been the case. But in this particular case, there was a missing factor, and this factor was acknowledgement. So we put that in under two-way communication with the preclear. We could phrase number 16 of the Auditor's Code 1954, which reads, maintain a two-way communication with the preclear. We could rephrase it and make it even more sharp by saying, an auditor must always acknowledge the action or execution of the preclear. You got that? The auditor must always acknowledge completion of an act or recognition by a preclear. When the preclear does something or says something and completes an action, the auditor must acknowledge. We find poor preclear is sitting there waiting, if you please. The preclear is sitting there waiting for the auditor to okay it. And the auditor doesn't, so the preclears are being hung up in auditing sessions. They're hanging in auditing sessions, and that is really the only reason you ever have to audit out the auditing. This is amazing. Now here's one of these little, insignificant, tiny, tiny factors that went along the line and has been going along the line quietly and unobserved here for 4 years, 5 years really, just been snoring along. Always done this, never audited any other way. And Barrett and Steve's got their long noses into this situation, just on the on the outrageous postulate he is undoubtedly doing something that other auditors do not do. Now, what is he doing that other auditors do not do? They were reading the first book or something sort of, and said this. Remember, try to find out what you're doing so you can tell somebody else what you're doing. And that's the big content. And here, 5 years after the fact, they find this evidently totally insignificant little point. Well, it came up, obviously, because they had just had a tremendous dose of new theory, and that was that the answer is the more important thing in communication. The scarcity of answers gets a guy eventually to the point where he's solving problems. You see that? In every language of which I have any cognizance, and I have no real knowledge of any language, maybe except English, but I do have across the street, embarrassed wave at several tongues. And in these, answer, solution, and reply are homonymic or synonyms. This is apparently very close into the human race, large. So, but there's something germane there to these things. All a fellow is looking for is answers. That fellow in the session is looking for answers. Then theoretically, you not acknowledging. He goes over and touches the wall, you see, and then you just tell him to touch another wall. This poor guy is looking for answers, and doggone it, you didn't give him one. So he winds up at the end of the session scarcer on answers than he began it. Well, now this is what we've been auditing uphill against. Well, that's a horrible thing to realize, isn't it? This is auditors. I've been watching auditors, training auditors. Never mentioned this. Nuts. All right. Now, let's just look at this and find out that you can get more darn wins this way than you could count. You can get a tremendous number of wins this way. Tremendous number. Now, there are many ways to run answers, but amongst them is not silence. That's not amongst them. Silence is not amongst them. A quantity of silence evidently could do nothing for nobody nohow. In spite of a 14-day fast they used to tell me about when I was a kid, which I've experienced, you merely get lightheaded after a while and kind of goof off. You get so scarce on answers in that 14 days that you go nuts, so you think you're fine shape. You join a monastery like I did. Now, what I heard here, that we could go so long without hitting this point. Now, here and there, an auditor's been doing this. And they're your real sharpies. They're the people write in and say, gee, I was audited by Joe. Man, I feel fine. There are your sharpies. So I hate to push sharpies and me and others out of the only one classification here. But actually, they were maintaining a two-way communication with the preacher, and people who would or could maintain a two-way communication with the preacher could get results, but particularly those people that would acknowledge. The preacher says, you know, he's going, and my mother would be safe on the moon, and my mother would be safe in the cellar, and my mother would be safe in the car. And the auditor says, well, give me some more places where your mother would be safe. Wrong clue. What happened that he's supposed to say at that point? What's the matter? What happened? Well, that swing of the skeleton came out, and it was carrying a red light and a green light. And it put on a cop's hat, and it said, you know, it's better than that. Now, the next boo-boo the auditor could pull there is after he told you all this about this skeleton, the red light, and green light, and so on, the auditor listens. He doesn't listen too long. He distracts the preacher's attention that this is going to go on forever. But he does listen to it out, because it might make a lot of sense. He doesn't change the process by reading love listening.
But the next boo-boo to be pulled is the auditor, the preacher having spoken. The auditor then giving the next auditing command. That's a real boo-boo. The auditor at least says, well, what do you know? Okay, all right now. Well, all right, let's find some more places where your mother beats ice. Two-way communication having been maintained, a sufficiency of answers is existing in the session. So it's not to increase the scarcity of answers on the pre-clear, who is basically simply scarce on answers. And that's that. This is big stuff. So that line 16 in the auditor's code probably should have a little subhead on it. It should have that little subhead probably written that way again. Probably the book's on tape, you can't dub any additional phrases into tape. So part A would be, he must ask for any data this pre-clear seems to have suddenly grasped. And part B, he must acknowledge the pre-clear's completion of an auditing command or delivery of data, verbally. He has to acknowledge. So that would be parts A and B. It was said someplace or another. Well, it's been completely forgotten. Well, we got our auditor's code today. And I know it's very strange for me to be talking to you people about auditor's code particularly. Remember, we got a brand new auditor's code. That auditor's code is a compound of experience, conduct in the auditing room. Now, in a unit of this character, people are held very accountable for the auditor's code. Extremely accountable. A lot of arguments, auditor pre-clear arguments. You find the session should have been going on, it's not going on at all. The auditor and the pre-clear are sitting there arguing about whether or not an auditor's code break has occurred. Well, that's an auditor's code break for the auditor to argue that an auditor's code break has not occurred. That's the one thing an auditor mustn't do. Engage in a big argument with me. Okay, so code breaks occur. All right, we will do something about it. Fine. We will continue to run the process. That's what we will do about the auditor's code break. Don't validate those code breaks, guys. Just don't repeat them. The auditor, it merely has to say, okay, I'll do better next time. Anything like that. And continue with the process. And the code break not being validated, you'll find pre-clears who are motivator hungry will be less and less anxious to have code breaks pulled up. Okay, so much for this here auditor's code. Proceed, please, and follow it real closely. Look at it in operation. Maybe some of you might be interested in finding out whether or not this is the fourth and third dynamic and second dynamic upset that finally winds the fellow up in the first dynamic. Just auditor code breaks on fourth, third, and second dynamics.